All right, we are recording and live on Sunday morning, November. December. Man, guys, here we are, December 3rd. We've been talking about Christmas time and snow, rain, all the things that come with this season. All except our good friend Arnold in Southern California. He complains about the sunshine.
As I said, it's rough duty, but
Rough duty. Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, guys. Welcome again to another conversation. I'm glad to have you here with me to talk about Jesus and us. I had thrown out a little intro again for you this week to think about. I've been, as you know, plowing through the seven letters to the churches in the book of what traditionally is called Revelation. I'm referring to it as the unveiling of Jesus Christ, and we're focusing on this Church of Philadelphia and the whole concept. The idea of open and shut doors. It so brought to mind the lessons I've learned and how God yes, definitely shuts doors and then he opens others. Dave, you were with us in the early days of our men's ministry, and it was so apparent. For various reasons, lack of attendance being the primary thing, and just indifference by churches in this area, God was just shutting the door to men's ministry, a regional men's ministry conference in this region. And as we realized what was happening, he was in fact opening another door that introduced us into this ministry. And how thankful I am that we heeded that sign or that definite way God was showing and directing us. I began thinking about all the other kinds of doors that have been shut or opened all through my life, and just gave me a sense of real thankfulness for God's providence and how he guides and controls. I'm sure you've had experiences in your own life this way, where you saw a door that just wham. And maybe at first you couldn't figure it out and then really get to thinking about, okay, yeah, God's hand is in this.
In addition to that, I've experienced doors being closed without me even knowing it. Okay. Case in point, having a conversation with my third wife, who was also my second wife.
For those listening or watching, that's a behind the scenes story. You'll have to write us, and or Dave will tell you all about it.
After Don and I divorced, we'd been divorced about a year, and she was actually thinking about maybe reconciling, and we were having a conversation, and I made a statement. Because I was a relatively new Christian, I was caught up in all of the legalism and rules that were being put on me. And before she said anything about possibly reconciling, I made the statement, I could never remarry unless the girl goes to the same church I go to. Okay. And I discovered years and years later, Don mentions this to me after we've remarried. And I realized that, this isn't the only time God put words in my mouth to shut something down. So
That's
sometimes I wonder if God closes a door through something we say without us knowing it until later.
It's a fascinating thing to think about. I wouldn't be surprised. He has mysterious ways.
Yeah. And, you know, because, you know, Donna and I have talked about this, particularly when she first told me about it. And I said, what a wonderful thing we didn't remarry then. You know, because I would have never gone to Africa, Serbia, India. I would have never got involved with the college ministries. I mean, I start looking at everything that took place in those 18 years that we were divorced. And Don couldn't even make the same claim. Yeah, certain things went on that needed to happen that would eventually bring us back together 18 years later.
Isn't amazing?
Yeah.
Traditionally or conventional Christian thinking wouldn't give God any credit for that. That would have been described as something happening outside of God's will, and he just repaired it. See what I'm saying? It doesn't give God any credence for the fact that he was involved in the actual shutting down, as it were, of a marriage or of a reconciliation. But it's not hard to see. God's not interested in just marriage. He's rebuilding people's lives. He's he's restoring people's whole sense of who they are. That comes first.
Yeah,
I've seen that in many cases.
You know, I mean, when I read your question, it just opened up a plethora of memories and things. I mean, remember when you asked me and another young man to take over leading the men's ministry? And we did that for a number of years, I forget. But then both of us came to you one day and said, hey, we need to step aside. Because he felt he was being called to spend more time with his wife and his stepdaughter. And I was being called to the college ministry.
Sure.
And for the young man, aside from needing to spend more time with his new wife and his stepdaughter dies shortly after that. She was 10 years old. She comes down with acute leukemia and goes in the hospital on Friday, and she's dead Sunday.
Oh my goodness, I don't recall that. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And, you know, a little sidebar here. One of my favorite memories from this young man and his stepdaughter was, you'll recall one Christmas, you asked us to do really the Christmas story. One of us took Joseph, one took Mary, I took the Magi, somebody else took King Herod. Anyway, when I studied the Magi, I learned that they would not have traveled on camel. They traveled by horseback.
Yeah.
Okay. And this little 10-year-old girl loved horses. So I was over at their house around Christmas time one year, and I pointed out to her that the nativity scene was probably incorrect. There wouldn't have been camels there. There would have been horses, because that's how the Magi would have come in. And she got so excited.
Yeah.
She just thought that was the greatest thing. You know, okay, horses at the nativity scene.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. So she was really, really excited about that. And like I say, unfortunately, I forget how long after that she got ill and passed rather quickly. So, but, you know, again, God wanted this young man with his family, probably partially for that reason. What he did for me and a lot of college kids, with me being part of the college ministry, was just, I mean, it was just fantastic.
Yeah, you had some
and, the relationships that I still maintain with some of them today.
That's a phenomenal encounters, engagements, yeah. relationships. Yes, you did. Yeah, in reading and seeing this again, it just it brings back that confidence that I have in Father God, in just looking out for your life, looking out for the paths and ways that He wants us to go. We don't. I think that. I know for sure when the Christianity I grew up in didn't give God any place in our day-to-day lives in that way. Mistakes or things that you encountered or roadblocks or whatever, you didn't look or see that in any way as God being involved. That was the result of your own free will, your own carelessness, your own, you know, passions and desires, but God was kind of left out of it. And then when you did ask for God's guidance, it was hard to make that bridge to understand that you could see Him in all things, because you still have this measure or this concept of control that most of your life is at your hands, at your own hands. And so you can't ever get across easily in that way. You know, people will pray for certain things and feel like it's all up to them and their perseverance in prayer. I'm even going to suggest like healings or whatever. Pray really, really hard, and then they don't arrive at that healing and say, well, God didn't hear my prayers or didn't care. Not thinking from the other side, wait a minute. What's God's eyes on this? How is He seeing this? Healing may have not been the first priority or the first thing that He wants you to see or have in your life.
You know, it's interesting because when we came to you and said that we needed to step away from the men's ministry, I don't remember your exact reaction. But as I recall, you were sensing that, yeah, it's time. And it upset a lot of guys in the men's ministry. They were mad at us. And then I would point out to them, well, I said, well, you could have stepped up and taken over leadership of it. Which would always shut down the conversation. But I guess my point is, God seems to tell the necessary people the same thing. When I was managing apartments for Dan Blackstone, there came a time to where I said, I need to step away from this. And Dan and I were such good friends, it was really, really hard to tell him. Well, unbeknownst to me, Dan was having a hard time telling me he was going to sell his properties and that I was going to be out of a job.
Have a job anyway. Yeah.
I remember we were driving one day and I said, I forget why it was time for me to step away. But I told him that and he goes, oh, good. He says, because I had to tell you that Nancy and I are. That's what it was. They were going to buy another property and live in it. So they didn't need me managing anymore. But anyway, because he and Nancy were getting married and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so God lays on everybody's heart the same thing. You know, or the people that are, I guess, most involved. And, you know, He may have laid it on the hearts of the men in the men's group, and He may have been touching one or two of them to take over, and maybe they ignored it. I don't know. Or maybe He was shutting the whole thing down. I don't know. Yeah. I just know what He was doing with me and the other young man. So
one thing that I was learning, Dave, in those years and still learn, when you see like in that case, when you see some people that you really thought were going to be the primary movers or leaders of a certain ministry, you see them saying, "No, I don't think so," and step aside. You have to ask yourself, okay, maybe God's not in this. And especially as you outlined or illustrated, no other guys were stepping up. Well, it was very clear to me, okay, this has run its course. There's an end to this, or a shift happening. And so learning to be sensitive and watching, it was, boy, I so appreciate the lessons that God was showing me in that. But I tell you what, when you get favorite, especially in ministry, Christian ministry, when you get a favorite, oh boy, what you think is going to be the cat's meow and doing great things for God, and boy, you press and you press and you put every ounce of energy into it, and you keep pressing and pressing, and it just seems like it's you're just pushing down boulders and rocks. It takes its toll, and you realize maybe when you're laying in a pile in a heap, maybe this wasn't God's idea after all. It was primarily mine. Yeah, that's a hard one. See, Christian ministry has this notion that you should be able to do just about anything. God's behind it. I watched that man who I worked for build that, and Arnold, you were there, work hard and do everything he could to build that empire, that ministry. And then from the standpoint or perspective I was having from the behind the scenes, seeing the toll it was taking on not only his life, but his family and the staff, and other people trying to come alongside. And it really becomes hard for the individual to let go and to say, okay, I'm going down the wrong stream. And
I
yet, on, go ahead, Arnold.
just had a flash of thought that Jesus said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And so on. We think we just have to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And it may not need to be that way.
No,
and that's a anyway, put down people that have that pushed through ministry where it really should have happened. I think you're speaking of Dale Galloway. And
I think
such a significant part in our lives. I think he did in yours, David. There was a church we sought out and found. Either we're a new Christian, newly committed to Christianity about 40 years ago. So it's amazing how it all works out for good for us that love him, that live in him. Go
I
ahead, Dave.
think sometimes, we follow what God has asked us to do, but then we let the ministry get in the way of what God's trying to do and wants us to do, such as shut it down. It's time to move on. Or we take it out of God's hands. Okay, he asked me to do this, and you charge forward, forgetting to keep God in the keep forgetting to keep God in the lead. And then as things go along, you give God credit for blessing it and making it so good, when in fact it probably could have been better if you would have kept God in the forefront.
Right.
So
And Arnold, you speak to the point. I believe that even though that ministry and Dale's efforts and energies, even though it may have been a lot of his own doing and maybe not exactly how God had intended, there was a lot of great work. There was a lot of great things that were happening, and God was using it. It was not necessarily how perhaps he fully intended, but God was there working through it. And that's the thing, again, guys, that I get so much confidence out. God says, okay, keep pressing, keep doing what you think you have to do. And it's not like it's for naught. It's not like God just turns his back and lets you go. He's there. And and taking the messes and things and turning them for good. So how do you your own efforts and say, I mean, follow your own passions and work hard and God picks up the pieces, which is better, or just relax and let God work? I think for me, as I've learned, I think it's a lot easier and a lot more restful and peaceful, and I'm happier if I just see God move and then follow.
The thought is, I wouldn't even be talking to either one of you if it hadn't been for Dale Galloway and his church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that our paths would cross.
Yeah.
I doubt that I would know you, Dennis, today.
No, right.
Or, a coffee that you and I had, and
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
just know the late Gary's suggestion that I meet up with you.
Yeah, a good brother of late, Gary Larkins. Yeah,
Larkins.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that if we hadn't moved to Las Cruces and I'd crushed my hip and been in the hospital a lot, that I would have connected and stayed with this Zoom conversation. I doubt that we'd be sitting here today if had not been in that process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just the balloons there, you know, I just passed my 75th birthday day before yesterday.
Congratulations.
Celebration here and stuff.
Yeah. But,
all my life, I've been a get-it-done kind of guy with corporate life or whatever projects are going on in life. You know, you just push up, arch your back, make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. Damn the torpedoes, so to speak.
Yeah.
And if the sinking in with me that God is teaching me is that while that's important, that is who I am, who he's brought me to be today, that at least now in my life, let that go and live and let live in him and me, me and him.
Right. Right.
As much as I can realize it, me and her community and me disappearing into him, that makes sense, at least at some level to me.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're making a lot of sense. Dave, you had something.
I think, you know, there was a movie that Dawn and I watched last night. Funny line. After something happened and Rob Lowe was the main character, goes, well, wow, I didn't see that coming. we have to remember that God never says that.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what church you're talking about and things go astray, it doesn't catch God off guard.
Mm-mm.
He knows exactly what we're going to do with what he gives us.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's like, you know, I think too many Christians and too many people in general think God's sitting up there going, oh, damn, I didn't see that coming.
Right.
You know,
Exactly.
but I mean, if he's omnipotent, omnipresent, I mean, come on. He knows everything. And nothing we can do is going to catch him off guard. And if we allow him, he will turn whatever we screwed up into a blessing.
But
Yeah.
Dave,
And
Arnold.
not and God is not sitting up there for me anymore. And he is sitting right here around us, in us.
Amen.
This thing of heaven being up there away. No, he's right here. As I open my eyes to that.
Amen. See, again, I go back to that whole theology that I mean, most of us grew up with, that God is so distant, or he's not directly involved. And unless I see, we were taught, I was taught, he's not going to be involved unless you invite him, unless you say, okay, God, take over. And so then you have this contest. Okay, God, I've said you could take charge, but I still have some of my own things I want to try to do. And so you're living with this idea that, okay, me and God, and I have to learn to work with him, or who's going to be in charge? And that is a prevailing theology that has so stymied a lot of Christians. It's not me against God or working with God. It's God all in all. He's primary. And I'm learning to see myself in him, as you say, Arnold. I'm forgetting about myself and just seeing myself as one with him. Don't know if that's making sense or not, but this is the thing we get into with a lot of Christians who can't understand why, for one, God would do something like whatever, he pulled the rug out from under him, or didn't see that coming, as you say, Dave. It's that primary blockage is, okay, I got to learn how to know which way God wants to go, and if I want to go with him, or if he's going to take charge, or I have to do this. There's none of this two people competing or trying to kind of connect. The sooner we come to the idea that we're all one, we're gonna find where it is that we belong and who we really are and what God's after.
See, coming up, we're coming up in the Christmas season here, where we're all aware of that. And, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son that came from God to earth. It's taken the learning that we've been working on me to realize that what that was all about is that Jesus said, I am a new beginning for mankind. Because I've given my life and you been crucified with me, that you're part of this new part of God's plan. But for me to understand, that Jesus truly is in me. And because he's in me, he is in the Father and I am in the Father. It's taken kind of this learning that we've struggled through here a bit to realize the really value of this God, for God so loved the world, he gave his Son to give
Right.
us a thing.
See, if we are even, should I say this? It's just been running in my mind. It's kind of abstract, and I'm trying to find words to how to convey this idea. If we're even in this contention of Okay, which door is shattered, which door is open? I think that in itself tells you where you still are in your Christianity, because you're looking for, you're still in a way outside and looking at a problem. You're not looking at it from, okay, the heart and the mind of God. There's no sense of open or closed doors when you're in the heart of God. You're just doing and you're moving and living in sync with his heart, with his mind. Whatever he's doing, okay. Whatever is he's not doing, okay. And so it becomes this integration that's so deep and so mysterious, I guess. It's not even a question, okay. All right, what doors are you shutting and what doors are you opening, God? I want to see so I can know, I can follow through.
For me, the realization of what he said, bringing you the peace that surpasses human understanding. Boy, I wrestled with that for 7 years until,
after Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law, and he spends the rest of the evening healing a bunch of people, then the next morning nobody can find him because he's out praying. When they came up to him, they said, "What are you doing? All these people need healing. We got to go heal them." I noticed, and I just, as we were talking, I realized Jesus didn't look at his disciples and say, "Nope, God closed that door. We got to move on to another door." He just said, "No, we have to go. I have to go preach in this other town because that's why I came." And a lot of what we're hitting on here still goes back to a conversation I hope to have sometime. How big is your God? Okay. One of the best descriptions of God's work that was given to me at a very young Christian age of 47 or however old I was when I came to Christianity. You can look at a beautiful tapestry. Could be an absolutely gorgeous picture. But we don't see that necessarily in the way God's working. What we see is the back of the tapestry that's just a mess. Okay. And perhaps to some extent, God's hiding the big picture. Although to me, that big picture, part of that big picture is that when we die, regardless of who we are, regardless of how good or evil we've been, we will be with God. Okay. That's the only part of the picture I can really see. What that's going to be like, I can't even comprehend unconventional or unconditional love. Okay, I cannot comprehend what the front of this tapestry is going to look like. I just know it's going to be really, really cool, really beautiful. Okay. But it is, I mean, if you look at the life and what's going on in the world today, it's the back of that tapestry because it's just a mess. And, I wouldn't even try, like the young couple I was referring to who lost their 10-year-old daughter, I wouldn't even try to explain that. But why did God let that happen? Sometimes it's best to just to keep your mouth shut. Unless you really sense God has laid something on your heart that's gonna, but it's do is my faith in God big enough to understand, regardless of how screwed up the world is today, it's all working towards his ultimate good?
Absolutely. And Dave, unfortunately, I believe that our Christianity, our teaching of prior days has not done exactly what you're talking about. Getting a hold of an understanding of who God is, all in all. Because we've still tried to help people wrestle with incongruities and problems, and okay, why did God do this? And these questions, and trying to salve their reasonings and their logics. And you that's not where it is. You have to come to this realization, God, you're working everything out, and we have to trust you.
You know, Jesus says, if you have seen me, you have seen God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We don't spend enough time trying to see Jesus.
No.
Because Jesus didn't get caught up in all the day-to-day BS that we get caught up
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Jesus didn't go around condemning people for their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus didn't go around condemning anybody for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got tough with the Pharisees, and he got tough with a few of the people he healed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all to better them.
Yeah.
It was all to help them see his love.
Exactly.
We don't focus enough on God, on Jesus's love, let alone God.
Yeah. Or, right, just looking at Jesus in the right way, I guess. In a conversation just this week, kind of text back and forth with this individual. And he's very involved, or very, should I say, supportive of a political candidate today that appears to have, I hate to refrain to names and everything, but the forerunner candidate in the GOP party, who everybody seems to say on one hand they like, and the other hand they can't stand. Mm-hmm. And so this individual has been supportive of this person, and I kind of take these little jabs once in a while. Well, how come all of the problems, and how come this issue and that issue? And it came down to the point, well, you're going to be labeled as this fanatic group of people, and you still claim yourself a Christian. And he fell back and said, well, this is Jesus. And I reminded him, I said, I ever saw Jesus getting involved in anything political?
Yeah.
I don't see him ever taking sides in toward government or oppose or whatever. Anything, he was mad at his own religious leaders. But that's another issue. And his response was, he says, well, you mean I'm not Jesus?
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
Who is Jesus? You're right.
You know, I recall, and it didn't Jesus just some, he was being questioned about giving money, and
right.
Didn't just drew a little line in the sand, and so I can't quite remember the story, but give Caesar what's due him and God. I mean,
yeah, and it do what you're told to do, and don't think about it. You know, don't have this question, well, do I pay that or not? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was this attitude, I think, oh, we're supposed to oppose the government here. Jesus is looking through that, saying, no, get over that.
Yeah.
God is in this. Give to Caesar what's his.
Yeah. And, you know, Caesar was seen, I think, in those days as pretty anti the Christ movement.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, that's the government that I've allowed you to have right now.
Right. Yeah. But no thought of looking through and seeing God behind it all. God involved in government. But see, that couldn't, you, that's no way. The government's the enemy.
I just thinking, that since we kind of stepped on the edge of politics, that one year from now, we're going to be sitting back saying, okay, this is what direction we're going now. It's going to be all over.
That's right. Yeah,
It's
exactly.
so anyway,
Yeah,
but
but can't
God's
go ahead.
hand. No, God's hand is, it has to be. It's you just know it at the level, at some level, you know it that you know it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I respect those people, well-meaning Christians, who have taken on this position. We as Christians, our mandate is to affect government and turn it into this godly entity. I'm sorry, that's not our mission. And any believer that sees his mission, now I'm not opposed to people getting into politics or in serving this way, because that's the nature of our government, it's how it's set up. But at the same time, when you call others to this movement of saying we've got to take over, and it's our role to make this government a Christ-like government, I think that's, again, that's pushing a rock that's not necessarily one God's moving.
I do know that hatred and anger, despite wherever I may fall in the whatever political or even topic would be, it deep down that does not fit with who God is. That is pure. God is such a perfect balance. If we just can open our eyes in nature, the perfect balance of what this planet is and
Exactly.
balance that we see around us, but such a perfect balance of peace and war, just injustice, what people would consider punishment and pure love. It's such a It actually is a wonderful thing to realize that.
And our as we point out here today, our goal is to know this God. He lives in us. This is how he operates, and we need to be more and more aware of who he is, and it gives us identity. This is who we are. When we see his heart, I'm so this as I referred to this particular letter that of Jesus to that church of Philadelphia, there's a confidence and a boldness that comes. He calls it the key of David. I'm reminded of how messed up David was. He was not a perfect guy, and yet there was something about him that opened up to him the confidence and the boldness to go right into the main heart of the temple. He it said of him, he was a man after God's own heart. When he didn't wait for the priest to give him any kind of forgiveness. He went when he knew he'd messed up and need God's forgiveness. Who does he go? He goes right to the source. He goes right to God. And that was his passion, to just be in the very center of God, knowing God, and having, as a result, that confidence and boldness then to watch God work and be a part of who God is.
So what is it? What does it say in the revelation, the unveiling? What is it? What does Jesus say to the Church of Philadelphia, there?
See, his whole admonition to this
Hold
church is he comes to them having, as Jesus introduces himself, he comes as one saying, I have this key of David. And so Jesus himself, Hebrews shows us, he had, if you will, the boldness to press in with his own life, press right into the heart of God, not counting his own flesh, being willing to sacrifice who he was to be in the center of God's will. And that's the key that unlocks the doors, you see. I have the authority to open and authority to shut. And how does that happen? It happens when we understand who God is and where he's working and what his will is. Now we're seeing and knowing, having his heart in us, and understanding that we can, as Paul learned, that we can triumph in Christ in all circumstances, no matter what.
You know, you mentioned politics earlier, and it seems to me when you look at people involved in politics who seem to have a heart for God and doing right, it's never about changing government. Okay, and actually the first person that came to mind when you mentioned that was William Wilberforce, who was a parliament member in England in the early 1800s, and he was instrumental in ending slavery in England. Okay, so it seems like, and you can find other people in politics who have done wonderful things, but it doesn't ever seem to be about changing the government as opposed to changing people's hearts. Because ending slavery is a heart change.
Yeah, it was.
Martin Luther King was all about a heart change.
Yeah.
And when you listen to interviews with his children today, they are sincerely upset about the way we're trying, about the way we're approaching racism now.
Yeah.
Because it's not done with love. It's not done through changing people's hearts.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is, I think this is part of what people misunderstand about Jesus. He didn't get involved in politics. He was all about changing people's hearts. You know, he didn't try to oppose Pilate. You know, I mean, he knew what Pilate was going to do long before he got there.
Certainly.
But it's in Christianity, and knowing Jesus and getting to know God is all about a heart change.
Yeah. A heart that will connect with the heart of God. And that transforms the heart.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You're so right, Dave. Guys, I think what we will see in the coming days is probably not going to be very, very exciting to a lot of people. And they're going to think, okay, God's turned his back, or God's God's not working, and we've lost our way, and Christianity doesn't matter anymore. What's the use of being a Christian? We've prayed for God to take over, and we've prayed for justice, and it's not happening. And we lose sight of the fact that no, the darkness will come, but that just means there's going to be more light, more ways that God is going to show himself. It's all in all. He's there, and he's going to open and shut And as we have the eyes to see it and walk into it and be a part of it, that's our calling. Just as Jesus did. I don't do what I didn't come here to do what I want to do. I only do what I see the Father doing. That was a man after God's heart. Man, I want to know God.
And the other thing I think we need to remember about Jesus was he never had the idea of a grand ministry.
Yeah, right.
He wasn't worried about filling stadiums. He wasn't worried about attracting 1,000 people to a revival. And it's often said, I've read this a number of times, that Jesus probably spoke to less people than what Billy Graham would fill a stadium of 60,000 people.
Right.
And Jesus didn't even talk to that many people.
That's right. Yeah, it's so true. And yet the impact is so much greater. Yeah. This is the God that we're getting to know. This is the one who lives in us, and we're getting to, we're unpacking the reality of his working, his heart, his mind that's in us. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Good conversation.
Touching the reality and getting to know this Christ and Jesus. And we trust others who find us and listen to us there will also be blessed. Give us a comment. Okay. Give us a right back. Right. So
in closing, pray for Washington that they win the national championship.
Yeah. he grabs a little airtime here for
like I could care really. But it'd be nice.
Okay. We'll go with that. All right. Yeah.
As long as we're talking about the omnipotence of God, all powerful.
Yeah. All right, so be it. Guys, have a great day, great week. We'll see you next time.
All right, have a good one all.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Bye bye.